Welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for the week of October 11th. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. Hello, my friend. How you doing?
Hey, John. How's it going? And thanks to Shooters Nagoya for putting us on the air.
I'm doing all right. Thank you. Let's see. Today, we got interviews from Aaron Boldarice of Oryx Buffaloes and Matt Merton of the Hanshin Tigers, and we'll look at the PL and CL races. And, gosh, we got a lot of stuff to do. Let's get going.
All right.
Here's clearing the bases. All right. Well, I caught up with Matt Merton today of the Hanshin Tigers before he went out and extended his hitting streak to 28 games in a row. Wow, what a stud.
Yeah, he's something.
Yeah, he was on an earlier episode. I think it was episode 9, if you want to go back and listen. And he was talking about the ball at that time and you know, how the movement was different on it this season with the, you know, the new Mizuno ball. And we've seen what it's done to the scoring and everything this year.
No question about that.
No question about it. I talked to Craig Brazell today, too, as well, before the game, and he was just going on and on and on.
Yeah, he loves the ball, doesn't he?
Boy, he wants him to make more and bring him to the States. I mean,
wants to use them for fertilizer on his farm, I think.
Anyway, today Matt Merton tied a teammate, Shinjiro Hiyama, who set set the club record with 28 straight games in a row with a hit. And now he's tied with former MLB star and Nankai Hawks player Tony Bernazard.
My buddy Tony.
Tony, yeah. Man, oh man. It's before my time, obviously.
Okay.
I'm a young buck.
Before mine, too, actually, but that's another story.
The thing is, Matt had two hits today, but he really looks locked in at the plate. But not only that, it seems like he's just, you know, trying to hit the ball where he's pitched. He looks like he's simplified things. And, you know, in the interview, he talked about changing his approach. And, you know, he had his issues with the ball early on, but he's hit like 336 in September and he's hitting 403 the last 3 weeks. He's doing pretty well.
Well, he's anybody who's watched him practice can vouch for the fact that he's you know, he does what he needs to do, at least off the field, and he's has a very solid routine about his approach, and you know he has a plan, and you know he's got the tools on offense, so it's not any surprise that he's going to hit for average.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it. I'm sorry, he hit 366 in September, and I mean, you know, he's hitting all but one, he hit safely in all but one game in September. You talk about tools. I mean, you know, I watched him in batting practice today, and he's launching balls out into the stands. I mean, he could hit for power. It seems if he, you know, if that's what they called on him to do.
Yeah, well, that's just a matter of what you know, what the team needs from him, and what. You know, what matching with what he can do. I'm not necessarily. Well, of course, he was batting in the middle of the order there for part of the season.
Right, and he still is essentially at number six, but not 345,
right.
Not a 3, 4, and 5 guy. So, but he's doing all right. He's doing all right. He moved his average up from 297. It's up to 318 now today. And
okay,
sounds like he's you know he's got this thing down. This is after a year where he broke you know. Ichiro Suzuki's single-season hit mark.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's bringing it. He's bringing it. All right, well, let's take a listen to the interview.
All right, you think the hitters have caught up with the baseball a little bit here in the second half of the season?
I definitely think the league's gotten more offensive. Why that is, it would be only speculation, but I definitely think that the offense has definitely seen an improvement over the last at least a month and a half, 2 months, yes.
We talked earlier in the season, Tokyo Dome,
right.
And you were talking about the movement on the forkball was different and all that stuff. Now, how have you been able to adjust?
Well, I think part of what it is as a hitter is just what you said. I said you begin to make some adjustments, maybe in your approach, maybe in how teams are approaching you. And I think over time, it's like anything else, it's a matter of game experience with the new ball. And I think that you somewhat naturally start to make the adjustment, you know.
What kind of things have you done?
I think this year, especially early in the year, I think it's changed a little bit, but I think it was important to be aggressive early in counts. You know, and then balancing that out, because I think with more movement, pitchers can put you away a little bit easier with two strikes, and also maybe a little bit of an expanded strike zone. also gives the pitcher an edge later in the count. So, I mean, that was one of them. And then obviously learning how to ball to strike or strike the ball, how much movement they were going to get on the pitch. And so, and that's not easy. It's still not easy. But I think that was a big part of some of the adjustments you had to make.
Now, some of the other, like, off-speed pitches, have you seen that there was more movement on some of the other?
It's hard to say specifically. Like I said, maybe the fork ball, maybe whatever. I just think as a whole, I believe that there was not necessarily more movement per se, as much as it was how late the ball was moving. The distance that it would move, let's say if it comes out of the hand here and finishes here, might be the same. It's just that I feel as if it used to be ball comes out of the hand and it gradually works its way, where now it's coming out of the hand and at the last so many feet, all of a sudden it just shoots, you know what I mean, or slides or whatever it may be. So I just think it was, yeah, the movement on some level just in general, and I think how late it was moving was a big factor.
Now, what about you? Recently you've been, being able to get your average up above. I guess it was August that you started to make a move and got it up above 300. And
yeah, I was at the All-Star break at 320 something.
Okay, so July.
At the break. And then I had a terrible month of at the end of July coming out of the All-Star break. I was terrible from after the All-Star break through probably the better part of August. I was terrible, and my average dropped probably almost 30 points. I was down in the 290 area. But I guess it's been over the last month or so, I've been able to swing the bat a little bit better.
Definitely in the last month. I think you have 42 hits.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. Yeah. But it's better than what it was. I know that. I'm just trying to take it a day at a time.
Well, speaking of a day at a time, now we all know you have this hitting streak going on. I mean, is it something the media doesn't seem to pick up and stay on a guy on a hitting streak? I mean, the record is only 33, and you're pretty close. Are you getting hassled all the time?
Not like bad. No, they have mentioned it. Yes, they have mentioned it. In fact, they've mentioned it on almost a daily basis, starting probably around. Probably around 20, low 20s. Mm-hmm. Low 20s, they started mentioning it.
So in the last
now,
week or so.
Yeah, but I'd say over the last two or three days they haven't mentioned it. And that is because when they've asked me, I've given the same answer.
Which is,
you know, ultimately it's not what I'm focused on. I'd be lying to you if I said that an individual player didn't want individual success. Mm-hmm. But that individual success has to be wrapped around the fact that you want to perform well down the stretch to the best of your ability to help your club win baseball games. That's ultimately what it's about. So I told him, I said, while an individual player wants to have success, that success is for the mere fact of helping his club win, and that the streak itself was not of importance as compared to the team winning. And so once I stated that three or four times repeatedly, I think they kind of let it go for a while. You know?
I see. All right. Yeah. I was wondering if you had any hitting streaks of this magnitude before you.
The only other one that I remember offhand was in 2009, the year before I came here, when I was in Colorado Springs, AAA for the Sky Sox. I had a 28 game. And I don't know for sure. I either broke the franchise record for Colorado Springs or tied it at 28, and I honestly don't even remember. But off the top of my head, professionally, 28 is what I've done before, and that was in 2009.
And that, I mean, to me, a hitting streak is something that you go out to accomplish every day when you go out to play.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, this is so funny. Hitting streaks just kind of happen. You know, you're going out every day trying to be successful, trying to hit, you know, and help your team win. And then what happens is just over the course of time, you get lucky a little bit, and you find some hits. And before you know it, you look up, and somebody's like, man, you've hit 15 straight games, or you've hit, you know. And then it starts to play into your mind, I've got this whatever going or whatever it is. But initially you don't go into a game saying, okay, I'm going to start a hitting streak today. You go out there trying to hit, and then it just kind of naturally happens.
Now the team has been, you know, up and down. I think you guys are 4.5 games or 4+
I think we're 4 games right now
out of third place spot. I mean, and you're hitting well, but you guys haven't exactly made a big move here. I guess you gotta
no, you know what, the bottom line is that over the last 5 games we've played well. We're 4-1. We've gained a game and a half in the standings over those five games. So we've made a move. But listen, the reality is it's not going to be easy. You know, I mean, the Giants are a good ball club. we're about to go into Tokyo after the game today, and the bottom line is we're going to have to, in my mind, win at least 2 out of 3. You can never say never, but 2 out of 3 would be almost a must, I would feel like. It's not going to be easy, but there's still an opportunity, and we've seen in the game of baseball many a times, and you refer it back to the major leagues, where teams seemingly find a way into the playoffs when they've been counted out. So as a ball player and as a team, you just got to go out every day, and I think at this point your goal has to be, like it is all year, but especially now, the emphasis is to win right now. Every single game is important. You have to win every game and play it that way.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
All right, Matt. We really appreciate you sitting down to talk to us. Thank you very much. And, you know, after the interview, Jim, he started asking me questions. He's great to talk to. He's like, how are you doing? You know, how are things going for you? And, I mean, I love when baseball players do that. And there are a few guys out there who do it. But, you know, they really, I mean, you know, we're all working, okay? We're invading their office space, essentially, and they're accommodating us. And it's really nice when they sit down and take time and ask me. So I talked to him about my marathon, you know, told him about my hamstring again.
Yep.
You know,
we all want to hear about your hamstring.
Everybody loves that hamstring. What's up with that hamstring?
We do. We do. It's the best loved hamstring in the world, perhaps.
I doubt that. I think that's Craig Brazell's hamstring at the moment.
don't confuse best love with people who wanna love it.
Now what did you take away from that interview? I mean, I had a couple things, but I'm wondering what you.
Well, I was interested in the, you know, in his perception of the ball and the difference between the break, which he was saying it really wasn't that different, but that it was late break.
Amazing. That's exactly what I picked out of the interview. We should have had a meeting before this, before we started taping the show, so that we could find different things in the interview
to talk about. But that's, you know, right. I was thinking about that, and I'm going, well, you know, hitters' perceptions being what they are, you know, there's really no accounting for that, other than just, you know, take it for what it's worth. And he's there looking at the ball all the time, and if that's how it looks to him, that's how it looks to him.
Exactly.
And what's causing it is a mystery to me. I think it's perhaps, it could be as much, not so much the ball, as much as the pitcher's adjustment to, you know, what the ball can do for him. So that it might, if that makes any sense. So it's not, so I'm saying is that if the pitcher's using a different delivery with that ball than, what the breaking ball, the breaking ball now compared to with what he was throwing a year ago,
mm-hmm.
it's probably a slightly different breaking ball because the new ball gives him something a little different. So yeah, there could be, you know, the late break could be an issue.
Well,
so yeah, I guess it could happen. I mean, I'm skeptical because I can't see how it would happen, but I can't discount it either. I mean, it could certainly be happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, looking at, I just imagine that, you know, these guys have been going through and looking at video and analyzing video, and they're seeing that late action on the pitches, and, you know, essentially late action on a pitch is a death sentence for a hitter. I mean, you can pick up everything, but you can't, you know, once you realize where the ball or how the ball is breaking, you can't always get to it if it's late. That late action is really going to terrorize the hitters, and that's what seems to be happening. But, you know, he did say that the hitters were catching up and that offense is picking up, and, you know, maybe the hitters have been able to make adjustments, and he said, you know, that he made an adjustment to his approach. And then that was another thing I found fascinating, that he didn't get into the details, which, you know, they're industry secrets. I kind of understand.
Well, no, I think it's not a matter of industrial secrets. I think it's a matter of because he and I have talked at some length about his approach, and very often his approach is, against this pitcher, I'm expecting certain things in certain situations. And I think that with the new ball and his changing his approach is, well, one thing he talked about was looking for contact or looking to drive the ball earlier in the count.
Right.
That's an approach change. And in the past, we've talked more about location than anything as his approach to specific pitchers in specific situations. So he's going to be looking, you know, looking to cover a you know, shorten the area of the plate he's trying to cover. Now, I think that what's happening is two things. One, the late break is, you know, every pitch has some kind of, you know, almost every pitch has some kind of break on it. And the point of pitch recognition is that you can predict what the break is going to be.
Right.
And I think that pitchers having slightly different deliveries and the ball having slightly different flight characteristics messed up that formula at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it makes it harder. The more a pitch breaks, it means the more you have to adjust to it. And I think what happens is guys are adjusting to it because they know this guy's pitch sinks like this. And when they see it coming, they have a better they have a better idea of what's coming. So I don't think a late break is not that it's hard, but that it's harder instantly.
Well, yeah, you have less time to make your adjustment.
Well, right, because it's not a small adjustment to make.
Right.
But but on the other hand, it is simply just an adjustment. But the switch was so dramatic and so drastic that it took a while. And I think essentially we're getting back to, we're never going to get back to square one with this ball because it's a harder ball to drive.
Right.
And the break, yeah, may make it a little harder to hit in the long run, but I'm thinking that edge is, it's just making the hitters better.
Well, you know, that'll be a future show, probably.
Right. Okay. Right,
when the season finally, the regular season comes to an end, we can actually look through all the numbers and talk about the difference between last year and this year in terms of offense and home run production and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's great. But yeah, another thing that fascinated me about his interview was the fact that, you know, he's talking about this hitting streak, but he said after about 20 games is when the media started kind of hounding him. But, you know, you'd think there'd be more fanfare with this thing. This is, I mean, you know, it's not a 56-game hitting streak, so it doesn't take as long to get, you know, to start once the ball gets rolling, you know, you're almost up on it. If you're at 20, you know, you're only a couple weeks away from getting close to the record. So,
well, talking about fanfare, I mean, there was more talk about Goto's hitting streak.
Yeah, I mean,
and he got the 26.
Yeah, and this one kind of snuck up on us. And yeah, Goto, you know, he did a great job. Michitaka Goto of the Oryx Buffaloes. You know, he didn't talk about it that much, and they didn't, you know, his attitude was, well, if I get a hit today, I get a hit today. But that's not the goal. The goal is to go out and win the game.
Sure.
And, he really didn't know. And we're still, you know, I asked Goto-san himself, what's your longest career hitting streak before this? And he said, I have no idea. So, you know, there is not that much fanfare going on. I don't get it. You know, just now, just because we talked on the phone today and you talked about the fact that when he passed Randy Bass, who is just a hallowed figure in the...
Yeah, that was all over the internet when he was approaching Randy Bass. Oh, that's the Tigers' record.
Yeah. And I mean, now it's the seventh longest hitting streak in, you know, Japan baseball history. I mean, this is quite an achievement for a guy who's, you know, it's just his second year in Japan. And he's
well, this is an achievement, I'll tell you. He is making the adjustments. When I look at the, you know, I ran up the numbers this morning. These are the you can see the adjustments that he's making because basically he's got Ichiro numbers. they're mostly singles. He's got as many home runs during his hitting streak as Ichiro had all season, but he's going to hit more home runs anyway.
Yeah, he's got more power.
They're essentially mostly singles, and he's stopped drawing walks. He's just making contact. So, and there's nothing wrong with that if, you know, you're hitting 400. You know, if you've got he did draw three walks during the streak, so it's not all. I mean, Ichiro this year went a couple of months where he didn't draw three walks.
He drew them on with a paper and pencil.
Ooh.
But yeah, you know, you're right. I think, you know, the fact that, and I hear you hinting at this, and you just said it just a few minutes ago, but the fact that Matt's not Japanese is definitely influencing the fact that, you know, that there's no fanfare. And I don't know if they're going to try harder to get him out or not. I think because all these games have so much meaning, I can't imagine a team thinking, well, we're just going to pitch around Matt, you know, Merton.
No, don't. That certainly won't happen. Okay, now he's at 28, and the streak is 33. You know, that would happen. You know, if the Tigers were to sweep the Giants this week.
Which I don't see happening.
I don't see happening, but let's say they do, and now they're even with the Giants. Well, nobody's going to be putting him on base. You know, nobody's going to be pitching around him. So he's going to get pitches to hit. Even if they, you know, if they get swept, then that's another story. Of course, then the pressure's off and you can think about hitting the ball, but whatever.
Yeah. Now, another thing I found out when I interviewed Matt after the game
right.
was that he had no idea that he had tied his teammate's club record.
Yeah.
Which I found extremely hard to believe.
Isn't that bizarre?
Bizarre. Exactly.
This is like the Tigers not telling him he equaled the. Did he know it was a team? He equaled the team record even.
I think he did. I arrived at the pool of.
Well, it would be fitting in character for Hiyama not to tell him.
And that's what I was thinking is, you know, if you were Hiyama, wouldn't you go up to the guy and say, you know, you're one game or two games to my away from my hitting streak record. Good luck, or
yeah,
or don't touch it, dude. Why don't you just get away from it and let me have, no, wouldn't you tell him that? Something?
He's trying to win a pennant race too, so it's or you know he's trying to you know fight for playoff position. So no, but I would say good luck.
Well, I would say good luck,
but it would also his character would be I don't want to draw attention to myself for having the hitting record.
Why not? I mean, he's just kicking around at the end of the bench every day, and once in a while he gets a pinch.
Oh, he's such a good guy. I don't say nothing bad about Hiyama.
I mean, it's not bad. I mean, that's what he's doing. I mean, he played in 63 games. He's got 63 at-bats. I mean, they don't even get him near the field. I mean, he doesn't.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years.
So, I mean, you know, go up to the guy and say, hey, man, you know, you're getting close to my record. Good luck.
Okay, well, I won't see him in time to give him that advice because I'm not going to Tokyo Dome till Tuesday. So I will talk to him about it then.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine this happening in an American team.
Yeah, it is bizarre. And, yeah, who knows?
Well, I mean, if he's chasing my record, I'd be either like Wilt Chamberlain and say, you know, don't touch my record, son.
Is that how Wilt Chamberlain spoke?
I don't remember. Most of the 30,000 women probably remember his voice a lot better, but
30,000? Wow, you're cutting your brother short. 30,000. He's rolling over in his grave.
Reported women. Anyway, I don't really get it. It seems kind of strange to me, but maybe this is what it is. They're really team-wide, they're focused and locked in on trying to get to this playoff spot.
Could be.
I don't know.
That sounds like an excuse to me, but
that's
like exactly the excuse that we would hear. We were focused on the pennant race. God, I swear, if I hear that one more time, I'm going to throw up.
Yeah, right.
I'm focused on today's game. What does the owner do? What kind of work does the owner do that he can't answer a question because he's focused on today's game?
some kind of super work. All right, well, I mean, let's move over into the first place, or the run for first place now. The Swallows...
This is not a run. This is a slide for life.
Or maybe death.
Swallows are sliding down the hill like four-year-olds on a cardboard box, hoping not to crash and hurt themselves.
Watch out, trees.
Exactly.
I don't know. Well, we talked about it. Now, their August was hideous, but their September was actually better than I thought. I thought they, because they lost so many games at the end of the month,
okay.
I thought they had a bad September, but they actually had a good September.
Oh, they played well. They played well for much of the month, and you know they sort of stopped their slide, and they kept the Dragons from having a 5-game lead right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got to be happy about my Dragons, but this is totally. I mean, I was again another week of inner conflict where you know should I pick the Swallows? I changed halfway through the season, right? I jumped from the Tigers bandwagon over to the Swallows. I change all the time, but I, you know, and I said with confidence, called you a typical Mets fan. I said all kinds of made a
angering our Mets listeners,
and here it is. It's coming to fruition. They're sliding. They're falling. They're slipping. They're sliding. They can't keep their feet. They win just enough to stay around. They were staying in first place for a while, but they fell out of first this past week. They could have gotten back in the first had the Giants figured out how to score a run tonight with all the runners they stranded. I'm saying that, but it's Sunday night. And now here they are, a half game out, starting a four-game. They have a four-game set at Nagoya.
Mm-hmm.
Starting on Monday. And this is going to... I mean, you know, I don't see either team sweeping. But, you know, if they need to win at least two games, they're going to have to try to get to three games, I think.
Yeah, well, the Swallows were kind of a funny team in September. They had Aoki playing for the first time this season, it seems. He had a really good month of September. He had a really good September. Kawabata had a really good September.
Every time I looked up, that guy was getting, he surprised me because I thought he was overachieving in that he came up in big situations for him.
Well, yeah, that happens. I mean, there's always a Buddy Bielancana out there who's, I mean, I don't mean to take anything from if you're a Buddy Bielancana fan, but there are guys who get hits in big situations because, things happen.
Yeah.
The ball bounces the right way. They get, they have good plans and good swings at that instant. It's not something they're able to reproduce for their careers, or they wouldn't be called Buddy Bielancana. They'd be somebody else. They wouldn't be, what's the cat who hit the home run for the Yankees and beat the Bucky Dent? They're not going to be Bucky Dents. By the way,
so glad to see the Yankees out of the playoffs.
Okay, what a shock.
Back to our regular schedule programming.
I love the Yankees so much, but you were afraid your health would suffer if you saw too much of them in the playoffs.
Anyway, back to regularly scheduled programming.
Indeed. Okay, rant over. And my rant is pretty much over. So, yeah.
You were saying Kawabata played well, Aoki played well.
Yeah, he played over his head because it's a normal function of playing is being hot and cold and things bouncing the right way and you being in the right move and, the planets being in alignment. It happens. It's not so – I wouldn't bet on it happening again.
All the injuries really just took a toll on that team and it got the best of them. And I thought, all the times I kept saying they're the least flawed, that was with a full roster of guys who are mostly healthy. I mean, everybody gets dinged up and we know that, but you play through the injuries, you play through some of the plant pain and.
Well, the Dragons, they've had, the minor league rest home going full, on all cylinders. Guys, coming back to the first team all well rested.
Yeah, either that. Yeah, well, I mean, around the infield, guys have been in everybody except Araki, I think, has been, and Mortino just somehow gets to play every day no matter what he's batting.
Well, I'll tell you, the thing the Dragons have going for them is their offense. Those guys at the top three guys in the order are just getting on base.
Yeah.
They're getting on base like crazy, like they haven't been all year. And I think this is part of the, this is part of the adjustment process that Matt was talking about. These guys are, I'll tell you the other funky thing about September was, maybe we should start calling him Mr. September. Motonobu Tanishige, Mr. September.
Yeah, man, he was awesome.
333, batting fifth and sixth in New York.
Mostly fifth. I mean, they brought him up to fifth, and I'm like, oh, God, he's hitting 230. Why are you putting this guy in the number five?
Because then he went, this guy's 40 years old, he hits 333, and they had him playing first base.
Face one day, and I'm like, what are you doing, Ochai? What are you doing? That's why they're not signing you next year.
And the answer is, he's doing what he does, which is winning. Just go along for the ride and enjoy it, babe.
Shut up and watch the results. And I mean,
yeah,
Ishige could have had a walk-off single tonight in the ninth inning, but the Giants, like they're prone to do, played the outfield way up. And they cut off the run. They threw out the runner at home plate with it. Two out base hit. Well, the Dragons won it in the 10th inning. So
okay.
They did okay.
But the Dragons' offense has come back. It was just, it was just hideous. I mean, this is better than anybody. The Dragons' offense was hideous the first 3 months of the season.
And, I mean, it was enough. It was all they could do to get a runner on. I mean, don't expect them to do anything but stand there at first and watch the other three guys or two guys strike out. I mean, they were horrible. And now they're getting over, and then, they're poking balls, in the holes, and they're dunking balls that are falling in. The thing that they do is they win close games. And you talked about the fact that the Swallows had done that earlier in the season. But the Dragons, what? They were 28-14, or they are 28-14 since September the 1st,
yep.
But in games that are decided by two runs or fewer,
right.
14-4, was it? 15-4.
Something like that. Very 15-4.
Yeah. Pretty amazing that they can, control these close games. And normally they do it with a good defense, but I don't know that the defense has been that great. It's just that they've really pitched well.
Their defense has been good. I mean,
you said that last show.
And it, it stabilized a little bit. It was I don't know that it was bad or good early in the season, but it's looking all right now. The pitching has been, they're playing like the Dragons right now. They're playing like the team, other than, you know, not having Tony Blanco. But Tony, as we said, Tony's getting good swings. He's not hitting. He's still really not getting any kind of average to speak of. He's making tons of outs. But he is getting good swings, and that's part of it.
Well, that's what I like to see. You can't always control where the ball goes. I mean, you can hit it hard. Sometimes you hit it out, but otherwise you can't really control where it goes. But get some lift, drive the ball, hit, you know, maybe you can pull it down the lines. And he's been doing that. He's been pulling everything. Let's not kid ourselves. I haven't seen him think about right field as a place to take the ball. He's looking at it.
No, right field is where the balls go when he's playing first. it's that no man's land behind him.
Although he did make a throw the other night.
Yes, heard about the throw. Okay.
He did make a throw the other night. So he had to field the ball to throw it.
No, I've seen it. You know, he's got it in him. He just doesn't find it all that often.
Nope, he does not. So, yeah, I mean, the thing that they do and the thing that they've always done under Ochai is compete. You know, even though you look at the roster and you're thinking, how can a roster like this, how can guys hitting, you know, so poorly as they have for most of the season? And they haven't scored all that many runs. I think they have the fewest runs scored in the Central League. How do they compete? How are they in first place? It's just, you know, it's just, they talked about Bobby Magic before, and I think it's Ochai Magic or some foolishness. I mean, what are they? 392 runs, and all the other teams in the Central League are over 400 runs.
Well, again, this is the
And I know it's the park that they play in.
They play in the best pitcher's park in Japan, and the Central League has a couple of good hitter's parks. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a surprise. I mean, their runs allowed isn't that much less than the Giants, which is another good pitcher's park, and not that much lower than the Tigers, which is another good pitcher's park.
Their team batting average at .229.
Well,
that's just all.
Yeah, that is their problem this year. That was their problem. It's not their problem now because they are hitting for average now. So yeah,
that's the worst in Japan. That's the lowest in Japan. So I mean,
right.
With that,
They hung with the Swallows despite all those problems with their pitching staff being really up and down for much of the year. So,
yeah, that's true.
More power to them. I mean, they're there now. That's all that counts. I think I don't see much difference between the two teams.
Exactly. I mean, I'd like to even predict, you know, this 4-game series, but I have no. I mean, you know, they could. You know, they got.
Well, you
they
know,
nearly
the history of the Dragons
week.
And the Swallows. It could be ugly. It could be really ugly.
Well, the Dragons nearly got no hit last night. There was a one hitter by Sawamura on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And here on Sunday night, they were no hit for 6 2/3 innings by Dickie Gonzalez, who came out. I mean, essentially, you were concerned that he wasn't going to be able to pitch in the postseason, but he looked.
Well, that was
tonight.
Before. You know, that was the next day. They have, you know, they're talking about him tuning up on the farm. I'm going, okay, he's ready to go, and here he is.
Yeah, well, he looked more than ready to go tonight. He was
good.
Great. He was fantastic.
And, good. Well, he was super sharp when he got healthy this year, which we haven't seen really in 2 years. He pitched about two or three useful games last year, and he was pretty awful.
Yeah, well, if he's going to pitch like that, like he did tonight, then they're really a contender. And so, I mean, a contender to win in the playoffs, I'm saying, because looks like they're going to get third place. So that changes their outlook. If you have Utsumi, Sawamura, and Gonzalez, now you're looking at a different animal than before.
Yeah, it's like Sawamura, sometime about August, somebody told him that this is a big year for pitchers.
Well, no, I think he must have listened to our podcast. When we picked him to be the Rookie of the Year, even though he was, a few games under 500 at the time. Somebody must have told him.
Well, that must have been it.
It's Japan Baseball Weekly, man. You've got to check this out. These guys are picking you to be Rookie of the Year. They've got faith in you, regardless of your record.
You know, having talked to Sawamura, I think that's about as likely as him catching Ebola virus from handling somebody's bat. We don't go too far into that one, but
no. But yeah, all right. Well, so I see. I don't know. I'm going to pick my team to finish I'm going to pick my. I'm going to root for my team to pick finish first.
Go for it. Yeah, I mean, hell, they deserve the credit. You know, I'd love to see the Dragons finish first. I'd love to see the Swallows finish first. I'd love to see the Dragons finish first. You know, just a little extra dig at the Dragons for, you know, wanting to use their team as a jobs program to hire former Dragons.
Yeah, to fire. Well, they want a more marketable person. They don't really care about wins, and so yeah.
Well, you know, to be honest, there is an equation there. There is an equation in which wins and wins and fan satisfaction are going to achieve their maximum, and they're afraid right now that the wins are not really helping. And that may be true, but, you know, being the Dragons, they have to go about it in the worst possible way.
Yeah, well.
That's what they do. At least that's what their owner does.
He goes out being the only manager in club history to lead the team to back-to-back league titles. It's a travesty beyond travesties. So, yeah, it would be a nice dig at the franchise for saying, hey, look, you know, we know you've won, and we know you've been the most successful manager in the history of our franchise. However, we have to say goodbye to you. Oh, thanks for the league title, by the way.
We'll fly it in your honor. Right, we'll erase all memory of you from the team store. We'll throw a Bobby on his behind.
All right, talking about behind, we are going to move to the Cebu Lions, who are only two games behind the Oryx Buffaloes for that third and final playoff spot in the Pacific League. These guys are the new roaches. You can't kill them.
Oh, well, that's kind of sounds like a compliment coming from you.
Well, you know, somebody called them dead, and then someone reminded somebody else that they called them dead in last week's program, and now here they are still scurrying around looking for that third and final playoff spot. And they really have an excellent chance to get it. I mean, they don't have very many games left.
They did what they needed to do, which was they beat the Buffalo. You know, well, what they really needed to do was sweep the Buffaloes during midweek, and they won 2 out of 3. But, you know, they had the big win in the series. They put up some runs. Now they're up in Sapporo, and they're playing. They lost a 1-0 game, okay? And now they bounce back tonight, and this afternoon, and they're looking pretty good.
Mr. Chow, of course, number 45. Yep.
Hey, what about that guy? I have to think, how can they not make him the MVP?
We can have a discussion probably in between the regular season and the playoffs, but.
Hey, I'll tell you, if Iwakuma's MVP for the second best pitcher in the league is an MVP for the fifth place team. What do you do with Nakamura?
I'm starting to change my thinking. I mean, because the guy is really he has wowed fellow players. Okay, everybody points to him and says, "Oh, yeah, you know, the ball, except for this guy."
Right.
Everyone is saying that. So I mean, even he's won over the respect of all his peers. And his average isn't really that bad considering his lifetime average. I mean, you know,
nope.
That much of
nope.
A drop. So.
I mean, if the ball had not changed, this mm-hmm. is close to being a career year for him.
Yeah.
And then you have to realize that home runs, all these things that are beyond his control are making home runs that much harder to hit for the rest of the league. Okay, now. Right, Jose says, well, he's a Deadpool hitter. Well, okay. Everybody else, just try to be a Deadpool hitter. Well, you can't. You know, he's got a skill which is more, okay, it may not be ideal being a Deadpool hitter. It's not that, you know, you're not going to be able to hit the ball, you know, where it's pitched as much.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to strike out a little bit more when you're looking for pitches you're trying to pull. But it is a skill, and, you know, what's happening is he is more valuable. Because it's harder for other people to put home runs in the seats, and it's not for him.
Right.
That doesn't make him a better player, but it sure as heck makes him more valuable.
Well, one of the more valuable players was Aaron Balderese for Oryx, and he was really helping them in their run to third place, but he's kind of cooled off. But I chatted with him at Sabre Dome just before the opener of their Big Three game series this past week. So let's take a listen to that interview.
Talk about the team now. You guys have been playing really well recently.
Yeah, you know, everybody's playing now well, and everybody's played together, so that's why the team is the third place now. So I'm happy.
Why? I mean, what's the biggest reason why you guys turned things around?
Yeah, I think everybody's try practice hard, and you know, and the coaches and everybody, you know, right now is, you see the feel different in the clubhouse, so everybody play happy, and I think it's why, you know, the things play good now.
Yeah, you guys played last year, you guys played really well in Interleague against the Central League. After that, not so well.
Yeah, you know, last year I had a lot of problems with the starting pitcher. So I think this year the starting pitcher is much better. So it's why, you know, it's the pitcher head to the team right now. And the heat is too, so it's why the teams play a little more better this year.
And also, you've been hitting better. Your average is going up.
Yeah, my number is better, but you know, my average is a little down. So, but you know, I try the best for my team. I try to help to my team every day. So, no matter how, you know, so I try to, you know, go to playoffs. So I feel happy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know that. Actually, Jose said that you're one of the best defensive players at third base in the league, so you can help on the defensive side too.
Yeah, you know, someday I can, I know he, so I try, you know, defense. Someday I play offense, so it's the way, you know, you have to try the boss, you know, every day.
What about Goto now? He had the long hitting streak.
Right now he's unbelievable, you know, you whatever he's doing is single, so he's hard right now.
How has that helped the team? I mean, he was part of the reason you guys started winning the games, I thought.
Yeah, you know, it's the third at bat for the team. Every time he's in the base, you know, sometimes Okada is take out to the home, so sometimes me, so that's why, you know, the team to is play a lot of win every day, you know.
A lot of games?
Yeah.
That's the thing for you, too. You started playing every day when you came to Orix.
Yeah, you know, my first couple years, I know, play a lot, so last year he gave me chance, so this year I play more. So I feel comfortable when you play every day and not play every day. So right now I feel good, you know.
Now, how about this series? This is a big series?
Yeah, you know, so no. I had to try, you know, the same every day, you know, no so matter today, you know, I had to, everybody had to play the same like couple of weeks, so I know it's good, important today and tomorrow and after tomorrow for the team, you know, but, you know, I no try put it too many pressure to the player, you know, so everybody had to play good and that's it.
Did you really expect after, I guess it was after, because you guys haven't been in first place and you really haven't been in second place for a long time.
Yeah, you know.
Did you expect this to happen for this team?
Yeah, maybe, you know, first place tough this year, you know. The second play, you know, the team had chance for play the second, taking the second place. So, you know, I had to play hard, I had to finish strong everybody, so the number is coming, so.
All right, well, good luck.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Aaron, we thank you. I know it's kind of hard to understand. If anybody doesn't understand, just let me know, and I will type out the interview and post it on my blog for people who, you know, have trouble
just
hearing.
Just raise
what
your
said.
Hands out there, and we'll count hands.
Just send a note. Just send a note. Either leave one on the blog or send me an email. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he said the guys didn't want to put pressure you know, they wanted to take that series like any other game, because if they had put added pressure on themselves, you know, it's not going to help and everybody's going to be tight. But, yeah, I think they need to, they're feeling a lot of pressure now. They lost again today. Was that four straight they've lost? 5 out of 6. And it's not going to get easier for them.
No.
Going down the stretch. I think they play the Fighters 3 more times, twice in Sapporo. They play the Marines once. And they play the Hawks once, so they've got to figure out a way to win some of these games if they want to hold on to this two-game lead.
Right. Well, you know, as you know, I've liked Aaron for a long time, and part of that goes back, and I've been thinking about this a lot the last week, and, you know, we talk about it a lot, me being, you know, you can call me a stat head, and if you don't like it, that's an insult.
Stat head.
And watch it. Okay. But the point being this, it's not a question, it's not as much, it's an insult if you want to be small-minded about it. But the point being, it's sort of, we look at the game from from opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people look at individuals, they look at the individual tiny components, and they say, ah, this translates into this. This guy has this quality. And they're trying to see qualities in the puzzle, trying to elaborate what these skills can mean.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, I look at the whole, not the whole package of skills, but I look at the footprint that these skills are making.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the team is doing, what players are doing. You know, I liked Aaron Balderas. I mean, I liked him because he was a heck of a nice guy when he was came up with the Tigers, and he was always positive and always smiling, and you know, he tried his best with his English, and I tried my best to, you know, to make that communication work. So I was inclined to like him, mm-hmm. but what I really liked him was what I really loved were a couple of things, and that was his minor league batting numbers. His central league numbers were pretty much nothing. He was a part-time player 1 year, and then he was in the farm team the next year. And when he was in the farm team the next year, he was hitting 358 in the Western League,
mm-hmm.
And 260 at-bats. Okay, that's not a lot of at-bats, but he hit 333 the year before that, and he did okay in the Central League. But the point being, if you know that the Western League is a pitcher's league,
mm-hmm.
if you know that Koshien is a pitcher's park, that Balderas is, you know, if that guy, a guy who puts up those numbers in the minors, is more or less, you can expect him, a player with those numbers, let's say he performs at exactly the same level, he's going to be a 300 hitter for the Tigers. At least that's what he has done already. Now, there are other issues involved, but essentially the difference between a 358 hitter, let's just say a 358 hitter in the minors and a 300 hitter in the Central League, is essentially some adjustments that he has to make.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a guy who looks at skills will say, well, you know, I hear this a lot. I don't think he's got the, you know, he can hit 358 in the minors, but I don't think he has the bat speed, or I don't think he has this, or I don't think he has that. But I'll tell you, he does have the tools to do it,
mm-hmm.
because he's already done it.
Right.
What he hasn't done is made the final adjustments. Now, the Central League will present different challenges, but he's got tools, you know, he's got the tools to do something, and it's a matter of finding them. But I do hear a lot of people who are observers, who are intent and careful observers of the game, say, you know, his swing isn't going to cut it. Well, let me tell you, it's not going to cut it at 350, but it'll cut it at 300.
Yeah, I mean, I like his swing. I mean, he doesn't uppercut a lot, but I looked at his swing, especially this year with the ball, and some of the home runs that he's hit, he's uppercutting a lot. But I think that's an adjustment he made to some low pitches, and he's figured out how to drive them when
right.
he gets what he's expecting, when he gets what he's looking for. He doesn't always uppercut. And so, yeah, I can see that. I mean, you know, you've picked out two guys who I didn't know why you fell in love with them, but they've panned out.
Who's the other guy?
Nobuhiro Matsuda with SoftBank. And you said, I think it was 2007 or 8, you said, the guy's a good player. And I looked at his first team numbers.
Right.
And they were just numbers. They weren't spectacular, but you were intent. You kept saying,
they got a guy down there who I think's as good a hitter as Matsuda, but they got no place to play him, who's Egawa.
Yeah, they got, they're just loaded in now.
Yeah, they are. So the whole point being there is not that, It's not that, well, the advantage of being able to look at the numbers and then looking for what's going right is that you know something is there.
Right.
Now, you know, there are guys who don't hit in the minors who are good players because their skills aren't working or they had bad luck or whatever. You really don't know. But when you succeed at a certain level, when you achieve a certain amount of success, you know the guy can hit. So essentially, the advantage of a guy who looks at the skills, on the other hand, is that you can extrapolate. You can say, okay, this guy has this skill. This is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another kind of knowledge, because you can look at a guy who has failed to a small degree and say, okay, I can see where he can be a success. The difference in his success and failure is like almost no adjustment at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very tiny adjustment. And somebody who fails, I can't see that, because I can't see what I see. I can only say people could fail for 100 different reasons. The largest, the most likely being that they're either not any good or not motivated.
Okay.
Or hurt. Or learning to how to switch hit. Or throwing pitches that they shouldn't be throwing. And somebody, you know, like Jeremy Powell, not throwing his curveball because that's what they told him to do in the majors.
Well, I mean, I have to hand it to you. You were right about Arum. And, you know, we'll see if the Buffaloes can pull this thing off. It's going to be a great final week of the season when it does come around. I mean, the games are kind of scattered. But, you know, I can only hope that we have something equivalent to what we had in the major leagues on that last day when all the seeds are locked up for the playoffs. I think the teams are pretty much set. It's just a matter of seedings, and we'll see. But, I mean, you know, if the Lions make a run, they can sneak in there and push the Buffaloes out. We'll have to watch and see how they go.
Yeah, there's some interest there. The Pacific League is their schedule is really beginning to dry up after Monday.
Yeah.
In fact, after tomorrow, when there are three games, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12, 13 games left in the entire league.
Yeah.
I mean, there are Central League teams. Who were we talking about before? The Tigers have that many games left on their schedule.
Yeah. They have the most, but yeah. We'll see.
So,
we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
All right, no questions this week, but we do have a couple of notes. One is that Takeshi Yamasaki, the Rakuten Eagles, will not be – it was reported today, Sunday, that he okay. will not be returning to the Eagles next year, which is kind of unfortunate. I mean, you know, I guess he hasn't played in about eight games, and maybe they just feel like they can't use him. But I mean, he's really been their biggest run producer since he got there, essentially.
Right.
The most steady and prolific run producer since he got there, and they started.
Yeah, this is a
five.
Yeah, he's a great story, because here's a guy. He's hit more home runs since he was essentially thrown out with the used rubbish by the Dragons.
Uh-huh.
He's twice.
Twice, but Oryx tossed him aside too after 2 years.
Sure. Yep. So, an amazing career. He really didn't get started until he was 27 years old.
Because he didn't get a chance, because Hoshino kept him down.
Well, it wasn't actually, you know who it wasn't?
It was Takagi. Huh?
It wasn't Hoshino, it was Takagi.
I keep mixing those guys up, because that's just when I came to Japan.
It was Takagi. This is the guy who's now going to be running the Dragons.
It's a shame. I'm going to cry. I'm going to be crying for the next, I don't know,
Hoshino
however long he's there.
Didn't know he was any good. Takagi didn't know he was any good. So, and then Hoshino got rid of him.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, dude. He's the guy who hit a home run, grand slam against the Hanshin Tigers to essentially clinch their pennant in 1999.
Oh.
Just a great, great player for the Dragons. And
a great guy. What a great guy. I say that it's completely biased, because Yamasaki is one of a probably seven or eight players who, if I don't see him first, he'll say hello to me before I have a chance.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a special place for him. Have been since he was just a monster in the Dragons farm team in the early 90s. So
Yeah, well, I mean, there aren't too many places for 42-year-old DH pinch hitter guys out there. I don't see him going back to Oryx or anything. So he wants to play next year. We'll see where he goes.
Somebody might find a spot for him if they need a 42-year-old guy who can't run or field. So who can hit a home run now and then if he's healthy. Yes, he can still play a little bit.
There's another guy out there who's not as old, but he'll be looking for work next year. Who's that?
Well, that must be our missing man in Cebu, Gigi Sato. Now, I hate to say this to you, know, we have a absolutely great listener who's a Lions fan. Actually, we have a few of them, and the one guy is a big fan of Gigi Sato, and couldn't happen to a nicer guy, unfortunately. But Gigi has been told that he's
that's the sound of him being not, cut.
That's a John's scissors sounds going on there in the background. We got John E. Scissors Hands.
He's cut.
Working for the Lions.
Get out.
Looking for a new job next year. Yeah. Well, best wishes. I hope everything works out for you. I hope you find your stroke and make some other team really happy. Maybe
he'll go to Sendai.
Could be.
Poor Gigi Sato. The Lions miss his offense, was the comment I remember. And I remember you taking my joke on that one. But
well, what can you say? It happens.
Well,
it happens once a year, so, you know, live with it.
Maybe somebody will find his offense.
Could be. I'll tell you, a guy who works wonders with is Akanamori, the Marines batting coach. He might end up in Lotte.
Okay.
Kanamori is a whiz with guys who are motivated. He has an extreme talent for finding ways to make batters little hints and adjustments that they might not have come up with on their own. And he's probably one of the best batting coaches that we've seen in Japan. The other one being Futoshi Nakanishi, another great guy. So, all right. So all good luck, and Gigi, try Lotte.
And speaking of adjustments, it's time for our listeners to adjust their mobile devices and listen to something else, because this is the end of the podcast. You can email the show at yakujohn@gmail.com or go to our Facebook and leave us a comment there. Thank you very much, Jim. Good job.
Hey, John. Well, thanks for all the hard work again and the hard work yet to come.
Let's hope we have a really great finish to the season. All right.
Okay, see you.
All right, enjoy your baseball.